Picture this. You're 30 miles out from your destination. The ceiling is dropped. Not to minimums. Not to anything illegal. Just lower than the forecast said it would be. You called flight service 2 hours ago, and the briefer told you to expect improving conditions by arrival time. They have not improved, but you're 30 miles away. The tanks are fine. Your passengers are expecting you. You have been planning this trip for a week. The hotel is already paid for. You push the mic key, and you tell yourself you will just take one look at the field. You already know how this ends. You have read the accident reports. I'm Pattern. This is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar, and today I want to talk about why knowing how something ends is not the same as being immune to it. Plan continuation bias. Researchers at NASA gave it that name. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, addresses it in Advisory Circular 60-22 on aeronautical decision-making. But it was killing pilots long before anyone named it. It is the quiet, perfectly rational feeling force that keeps you flying toward a destination you should have left behind. And it shows up in a staggering percentage of the accident reports at the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB. Let's talk about what it actually is, why it happens to good pilots, and what you can do to break its grip before it breaks you. Quick word from our friends at aviationsoul.com before we get into it. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. aviationsoul.com. All right, plan continuation bias. First thing to understand is what it is not stubbornness. That distinction matters enormously. Stubborn pilots are easy to identify. You have met them in the briefing room. They wave off the weather with one hand, say they know this route, and head for the airplane. That is a hazardous attitude. The FAA specifically identifies that kind of thinking in the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. Invulnerability, macho, and the antidotes for those attitudes are laid out clearly. Plan continuation bias is different. It affects pilots who are not stubborn at all. It affects careful pilots, experienced pilots, instrument-rated pilots with thousands of hours and clean records. It affects them precisely because it is not a character flaw. It is a feature of how the human brain processes information once it has committed to a plan. Here is the mechanism. When you form a plan, your brain treats that plan as the baseline. New information that comes in gets filtered through the lens of the existing plan. Data that supports continuing gets weighted more heavily. Data that suggests stopping or changing course gets minimized, rationalized, or reframed as temporary. And the closer you get to the goal, the stronger that filtering becomes. The destination gets more weight in the calculation as you approach it. Not because the logic changes, because the proximity changes. Researchers at NASA Ames Human Factors spent years documenting this specifically in aviation. Dr. Key Dismukes and his colleagues analyzed approach and landing accidents and found plan continuation error appearing as a significant factor again and again. Not because the crews were incompetent, not because they missed the data. The data was in the cockpit. They had the information they needed to make a different call. But the plan was also in the cockpit, and the plan was winning. You have felt a version of this yourself. Not necessarily in an airplane. Driving through weather when the sensible move was to pull over, staying at a gathering too late when you had an early morning. The destination has gravity, the plan has momentum. And breaking that momentum requires deliberate, effortful thinking that our brains are not naturally inclined to do when we are already in motion. Now put that same psychology at 5,000 feet, ceiling going down, visibility sliding, and a family at the destination airport looking at their phones wondering where you are. That is not a scenario that produces clear-headed risk analysis. That is a scenario that produces plan continuation. Here is what this looks like in the NTSB reports. The pattern is remarkably consistent. Pilot departs under reasonable conditions. Conditions en route deteriorate. Pilot continues, noting the trend, but rationalizing it as temporary. Conditions at the destination are worse than reported. Pilot requests lower. Pilot reports the field in sight. Pilot does not make it to the field. The investigation then reconstructs the pilot's record, experienced, current, no prior incidents, solid reputation. People who knew them cannot explain it. They were a good pilot. They knew the rules. What happened is plan, continuation bias. At each step, the decision to continue felt reasonable. The logic tracked. The risk felt manageable because the question was never, is this safe? The question underneath all of it was, can I still make the plan work? That is the trap. Now, the aeronautical decision-making framework the FAA gives us is actually built to counter exactly this, the 3P model. Perceive, process, perform. The key feature of the 3P model is that it applies during the flight, not just before it. It is a repeating loop. At regular intervals, you stop and ask three questions. What hazards do I perceive right now, in this moment? What does this mean for my safety? What action do I take? It is a forcing function. It pulls you out of the execution of the plan and makes you evaluate whether the plan still makes sense. And the Airman Certification Standards, the ACS, emphasizes this kind of in-flight risk management on the practical test for exactly that reason. The examiner does not just want to know if you can fly the airplane. They want to see whether you can make good decisions in a changing environment. That includes the willingness to recognize when the original plan is no longer the right plan. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The pilot who diverts is not the pilot who failed the mission. The pilot who diverts is the pilot who recognized that conditions changed, processed new information, and responded appropriately. That is what good aeronautical decision-making looks like in practice. That is what the FAA is asking for. The pilot who continues pressing toward a deteriorating destination is not brave. They are simply more committed to the original plan than to the actual outcome. So how do you break the grip of this bias in the moment? Because understanding it intellectually is not enough. Here are three tools that actually work. The first is the personal minimums card. You build this before the flight, on the ground. When your brain is clear and nothing is at stake, you decide your limits in advance. Ceiling not below 1500 for this leg, no penetration of visual flight rules conditions, meaning more than 3 miles visibility and at least 1,000 feet above the terrain and obstacles if that ceiling is trending downward. No flight within 40 miles of a moving convective cell. Whatever your minimums are, and they should be higher than the legal minimums, especially early in your training. You write them down. You keep them accessible in the cockpit. When you're airborne and conditions are sliding toward your personal minimums, you do not negotiate with yourself in that moment. You check the card. If the card says divert, you divert. The decision was already made by a version of you who was not under pressure, not 30 miles from the field, not thinking about the hotel. You honor that version of yourself. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, the AOPA, has resources for building a personal minimums card on their Air Safety Foundation site. I strongly recommend using them. The second tool is the voice of doubt habit. When you catch yourself constructing a case for why it is still okay to continue, that construction itself is the warning sign. The moment you're explaining to yourself why the conditions are acceptable, why the trend will reverse, why you can make it, you're already inside the bias. So practice this habit. When you find yourself making a case for pressing on, deliberately flip it. What would I say if a student pilot in my training airplane were in this exact situation, with exactly these conditions? Using exactly this reasoning, because your answer as the instructor would be very different from your answer as the pilot with a plan and a hotel reservation and passengers in the back. Use that difference. Listen to the instructor version of yourself. The third tool is the abort trigger. Before you take off on any flight that involves meaningful weather, you set a specific trigger in advance. Not a fuzzy one. Not if it gets bad enough. Specific. If the ceiling is below 1200 at this waypoint, I divert to this airport. If I cannot get a weather update by this time, I land here. You name the number, you name the point, you name the airport. When you reach that point in the flight, you check. The trigger fires or it does not. There is no in-flight negotiation. Airlines codify this in standard operating procedures. They call them gate conditions. The decision gate closes at a specific, measurable point. If conditions clear the gate, you continue. If they do not, you stop. The reason professional operations use gates is exactly this. They remove the decision from the moment of maximum pressure and put it in a moment of calm planning. You can use the same technique in a Cessna 172. Let me walk through how this plays out in practice. You file across country, departure is clear. Your destination is reporting a broken ceiling at 1800 feet, visibility 7 miles, winds calm. Reasonable, visual flight rules day, you get airborne. An hour into the flight, you check weather and get an update. Your destination is now reporting a broken ceiling at 1100 feet. Visibility 5 miles, winds picking up out of the southwest, still legal, still flyable on paper. But the trend is downward. Here is the decision point, not 30 miles from the field, here, now. Because in 30 miles, you will have 30 miles of momentum behind the plan. The destination will feel close enough to touch. The pull will be almost irresistible. The pilot who understands plan continuation bias makes the call at the trend, not at the outcome. If the ceiling dropped 700 feet in 1 hour, where is it in 90 minutes when you arrive? That question does not have a comfortable answer. So you check your abort trigger. You look at your personal minimums card, and you call the nearest suitable airport and start your diversion while you still have altitude, fuel, and options. That is the decision the ACS is designed to produce. One more piece of this that rarely makes it into the ground school slides. Planned continuation bias has a social component, and it is a real one. Your passengers are a factor. The expectation that you will arrive is a factor. The cost of the rental, the hotel, the morning meeting, the faces of the people waiting at the destination. None of those should enter the cockpit. The regulations are clear that the pilot in command is the final authority on the safety of the operation, but the psychology is real and it is powerful, and pretending otherwise does not make you safer. So part of your pre-flight on any weather-involved flight is a social pre-flight. Before you leave the ground, you set expectations. You tell your passengers that the plan includes the possibility of stopping. You name the alternate city. You frame the potential divert, not as a failure, but as exactly the right call, made by a pilot who prepared for it. When you do that on the ground, you remove the social pressure that would otherwise compound in the cockpit at 30 miles out. This is also worth doing for yourself, not just your passengers. The pilot who has already mentally accepted the divert before the flight is a different pilot than the one who is encountering it as a surprise at a moment of high stress. Decide in advance that the divert is on the table. It makes it much easier to pull the card when the moment comes. The last thing I will say is this: planned continuation bias gets its power from proximity, from almost there. Almost there is one of the most dangerous phrases in general aviation. It is the mindset behind accidents on perfectly reasonable days that turn marginal. It is what happens when the plan outweighs the data. Know this bias by name. Build your tools before you need them. Make the hard decisions on the ground. When the only thing at stake is the plan today's segment draws from the FAA Advisory Circular 60-22 on Aeronautical Decision Making, the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, and research from NASA Ames Human Factors Division on Plan Continuation Error. More at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern. Fly safe out there.